You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming out and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald.
And my name is Dr. Kevin.
Yeah, Dr. Kevin and I are going to take you on a little journey today. We are going to talk about what makes a good horror film. What are the elements that come together that just creates absolute fire in the cinema or in your home, depending on what era you live in. So with that, Kevin, let's get right to it. We're going to be talking about a little bit about like horror films in general. Now, there's multiple different genres of horror. There's, you know, slasher films. There's horror comedy. There's psychological horror. There's just straight up horror, which would be more like classic Universal Monster type horror. So what to you, what's the most important element when we're looking at making a horror film?
Well, for one thing, you have to start out with atmosphere. You know, that's very important. You know, it has to be that mood, the setting. You know, you have to set the tone, basically, for the movie itself. And, you know, it doesn't have to be like a dark setting per se, but something, you know, that you have to feel the atmosphere of some kind of fear, something lurking, something sinister in the background, that something unknown, something that could come out of nowhere and, you know, cause terror.
Are you talking about more like jump scares?
Not necessarily. Just like, you know, when a movie opens, you know, you have to set the tone as to what kind of movie you're getting into. So that kind of thing.
Okay. You know, So it's basically just generally creating an atmosphere by telling the story. It's the plot that works for you.
Right.
Oftentimes in a horror film, we're introduced to the incident, like an incident that happens right away. Mm-hmm. So horror films to me are the best films for people with attention issues because it just tries to grab you right away. And I think the reason behind that, or part of the big reasons behind that, would be because horror films are notorious for having lower budgets. They're not usually made on a huge budget. So they have to have the ability to grab your attention, whether it be with the poster, you know, usually is the poster, and then the film itself, especially the beginning of the film. They want you to instantly be scared and to be wowed, as far as like they want your blood pumping, they want your adrenaline going, they want you frothing at the mouth for whatever comes next, which usually in that case, after that inciting incident, is plot. And sometimes that can drag, and sometimes it can work perfectly in with the film. It just depends on what type of horror film we're looking at.
And also music. Also, music's very important.
Oh, yeah. Music is very important. But let's look at, since you brought up the plot in the beginning and the atmosphere, let's look at some films that were successful at doing that. Do you have any in mind?
Well, off the top of my head, one of my personal favorites, Nightmare on Elm Street, from the very beginning, from the opening credits. I mean, think about it. You see a guy, a mysterious person. He's building the glove with the blades on it, and he puts it on. So you know this guy isn't right. And then on top of that, you have the very true opening scene where you see someone is being chased. They're in a nightmare. They're running for their life. You know, mm-hmm. It's dark. It's dreary. You know, the mood is set perfectly. You know that someone very sinister is after her. Her name, the character Tina, at the beginning of the movie. You know something's up, and it's very scary. And then, of course, you find out it's a nightmare. It's like, oh my gosh, what's going on?
Right. For me, I would go with something, and this is a little more, I think, a little more bigger budgeted, but still not a huge budgeted film. I would go with Scream myself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Excellent. Excellent
reason
choice.
Reason being is that, you know, not only because it's Drew Barrymore at the beginning, and she's, you know, a cult icon and an actor of certain clout to begin with, but the fact that they kill her off, spoilers, so quickly in this film. The fact that they build the kind of tension and scariness with just a voice on the phone and her reaction to it. You have to have an actor of that caliber that's able to carry that scene. Because there's not a lot of action right at the beginning, but there's there's plot.
Dialogue. It's basically important. Dialogue.
That's what's dialogue. Setting the theme of the film, that they get these calls and then someone gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that works in the movie. So that's what they're building you up to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it works so perfectly when she gets the call and she's being very blasé and relaxed and having a good time.
No big deal.
And then questions start to come in that are a little too close to home, and seems like somebody knows her
mm-hmm.
very well, or at least has done their homework, and that starts to worry her, as it should anybody, particularly a young lady like herself at the time, should be worried about that, especially when she's home alone. So those types of things all come into play. I've always been curious, and I've asked a few people, but I've always been curious if Scream affected women more so than it did men, as far as like it being a horrific story.
I'm sure it did. It had to, especially, you know, going back to movies that involve babysitters or, you know, teenage girls by themselves at home, and you got the creepy person, in this case, you know, on the phone calling you or stalking you. Oh, I'm sure it does. It gets into your head because you know it's very realistic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's very realistic, and it's just so well crafted. It's just a story that's told so well. So those are a couple good examples. Now let's look at what you were saying when it comes to the music. Now the music, having a score is very, very important. Having the right music is extremely important. Mm-hmm. And in which this case is, what film would you look at if you were looking at something that demonstrates the ultimate effect of a score in a horror film?
Oh, I can give you two off the top of my head. Halloween, you hear that music, you know what's up. Mm-hmm. You hear that do 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 do. I mean, you already know. I mean, it's so synonymous with Halloween this time of year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like you know. I mean, it's such an effective score. And of course, the other one I was going to mention was Psycho. I mean, everyone's familiar with that one too.
Mm-hmm. Very
so,
true.
So right there, when you hear that music, you know what movie it comes from or what character
right.
it's attached to. So that shows you how powerful and effective a very good musical score is.
Now, with Halloween, we either have or will be going over this shortly. With Halloween, that one, the score was created by John Carpenter himself, who directed the film.
That's right.
So that's an interesting element that you don't normally have.
He had no choice. He was on budget. He had no choice.
Right. Yeah. So he created something so iconic that, I mean, I can't think of a more iconic horror theme than Halloween with Michael Myers. That one just sets the tone for every horror film that comes, as far as like, nowadays we don't get as many horror films with that type of go get them, like ingenuity, that kind of sets the tone as far as the music. Normally people will, you know, pay for music and then they'll do a score or something. But the score is nothing that really, when you listen to it, emotes such feeling
mm-hmm.
as you get with Halloween. I would go with another one to add on to that, because I was going to say Halloween would be one of mine. Another one I would say would be of the Friday the 13th.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. You hear that? 13th. You know what that is,
right? Cha cha cha, kill kill. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That tells you exactly what you need to know, and it tells you exactly when something bad is going to happen. So it kind of amps you up and prepares you for that moment, but you still don't know and can't expect exactly when that moment's going to hit. So it's like a tease to get you to that point, and then they just slam it home, and you're just freaking out when it happens. So it's really, really well done.
Right. Or going back to Elm Street, you know, that kind of like that dark nursery rhyme involving Freddy, you know, 1, 2... Freddy's coming for you. 3, 4, better lock your door. You know, that's a very creepy, you know, song, but also rhyme as well. You know, it's just really creeps you out.
Yeah, absolutely. It does creep you out, and it leads you into the entire story, really. And mm-hmm. that's because we know what Freddy's all about because of that song. Mm-hmm. So we have like plot and in the opening and stuff, the sequence and stuff. We talked a little bit about the posters and the advertisements and stuff like that. And we mentioned the music. What else do you think would create a certain element for a horror film that could make it successful?
Well, I think another important thing would be at least one, maybe even two sympathetic characters. You know, basically a protagonist that you're rooting for to survive, you know, the whole ordeal from mm-hmm. beginning to end. You're rooting for it. You're like, man, I hope he or she makes it, or both of them make it.
Right. That's a very good point. You need a strong protagonist, and you need a strong, again, you need a strong villain. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they created a movie not too long ago, and it was written by a gentleman that was on Survivor for multiple seasons. I can't remember his name right off the top of my head, but I'll think about it. And he wrote a movie called The Bye Bye Man, if I recall. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that movie?
No, I don't. Tell me about it.
The Bye Bye Man was a. It came out in 2017. It was a supernatural horror film, and it was Jonathan Penner. That's who it was. He was on multiple seasons of Survivor, so I knew that name very well. And he actually had a small bit part in The Bye Bye Man, but. The story itself was a...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that. I see the poster now. I remember now.
Yeah, it was basically in the 60s, a mass murder occurred in, I think it was Wisconsin. A man kills people on his block. He shoots a neighbor. He continuously asks if anyone spoke about the name, which cannot be said. Mm-hmm. He just keeps repeating over and over, don't say it. Don't think it. Don't think it. Don't say it. Basically, then in present day, this bye-bye man comes back, and you're not supposed to think about him or say his name or anything, or it kind of brings him to the forefront. It was done very poorly, I think. The villain itself, unfortunately, and I love Jonathan Penner, and I think he seems like a great man. And I know he's been going through some stuff here as of late, so, you know, my apologies to that. But the villain itself in this movie, and even the hero, are kind of wet noodles, I think. They don't play well off of each other. The protagonist does not play well with the villain, and it just doesn't cohesively mesh. Now, when you look at, for instance, we'll go back to Halloween, you look at Michael Myers and Jamie Lee Curtis, and those two characters mesh so well that you can't think about Michael Myers without thinking about Jamie Lee Curtis. And you can't think about Jamie Lee Curtis without thinking about Michael Myers.
That's true.
It's crazy. It's crazy. But you can definitely think about the Bye Bye Man without thinking about the lead in the film. And you don't care.
See, the Bye Bye Man, that kind of reminds me of Candyman. It looks like he was trying to do his version of it. In a way, because it's very similar. Candyman, if you say his name five times, you know, in front of a mirror, he will appear.
So yeah, and that's one I've never actually seen, Kevin. I've never seen that film myself.
No, I'll lend you the DVD. You know, it's good. It has Virginia Madsen and Tony Todd. You know, it's a good movie.
Virginia Madsen. Yeah, I remember that. She was in, recently, I think she was in Swamp Thing, the TV series, if I recall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But Virginia Madsen is a good... You know, counterpoint to Tony Todd's Candyman, as far as, you know, protagonist versus the antagonist, and how and where the story leads. You know, it's very effective.
Well, she's a solid actor. You know that you have somebody like that with
just like her brother,
good chops. You know,
yeah, just like her brother Michael.
Yeah, 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 exactly like her brother Michael. They both have had a very good career as far as like. You know, being in some prominent films and then doing a lot of B films and stuff like that. Just staying working, in other words.
Yeah. And, you know, Candyman has a pretty cool ending, too. You know, nice little twist there at the end. like something that you probably wouldn't anticipate coming necessarily. So
are you excited for the remake of that film or no?
Probably not. I mean, I'll give it a chance, you know, just to be fair, but
right.
You know how it is. Most remakes are just don't cut it.
It is done through Monkey Paw Productions though, correct?
I believe so. I think Jordan Peele's involved with it in some way.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's like producing or something like that. So, you know, that might leave an element for hope.
Right.
But I think Jordan's career is still too young for us to say, this guy, everything he does and everything he puts his hands on is going to be a hit.
Gold. It's going to be gold, right?
Right now he's in Shyamalan stage, you know, early Shyamalan. Like everything he touches, everybody likes. Everything he touches, everybody, you know, goes to see, and he's making money hand over fist for production and for the studios and stuff. And they love him for that. But as soon as things start to hit a little raw and people stop going and they don't, you know, or they, you know, he creates a clunker and somebody doesn't like it, he's going to be right back down, you know, right? He'll be having lunch with Shyamalan being like, what did you do to kind of turn your career around there for a short minute? And how, you know, there'll be some note taking, in other words.
Well, the good news is Tony Todd is reprising the role as Candyman. I thought they were to get somebody else. So that's good to know. So he's still... They're staying with the original Candyman.
Really?
So that's good.
He's reprising his role.
Yeah, that's good. See,
that I did not know. So that is actually a really good idea.
Yeah, because now, you know, he's going to be 66. So you know what? Maybe in this version, you know, he's going to be obviously an older Candyman. So that might actually be more frightening in a way.
It's like taking Robert Edlund, you know, out of Friday the 13th. Or Nightmare on Elm Street, I'm sorry. And saying
Robert Englund.
And saying that you're not going to be Freddy Krueger, and then they make it Jackie Earle Haley. Mm-hmm. And then the comparisons just wouldn't stop.
It's hard. It's hard to beat. You know, it's hard to get overcome.
It's really hard to take over a horror icon like that unless you're a soundless, mask-wearing villain.
Like Jason or Michael or right. Leatherface, yeah.
In which case, no one knows who you were to begin with. So it is hard on those actors because they can be easily replaced.
You're right. But Freddy, Candyman, Pinhead from Hellraiser, and even the Chucky doll guy, you know, it's hard to... even better, Leprechaun, your boy Leprechaun. Warwick Davis, it'd be hard to replace those people because you're used to them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that does... tell you a lot about these types of actors and the abilities that they have. And they do have, you know, there's some excellent acting going on in a lot of these horror films that we don't give them credit for.
Which is funny you mention that, because a lot of these guys who do have the speaking parts that build these characters, a lot of them have theater backgrounds, interestingly enough.
Hmm.
So, you know, they actually have, you know, they really do have some really good acting chops, from Tony Todd to Tobin Bell, who plays Jigsaw, to gentleman escapes right now, who plays Pinhead. You know, they actually have like real theatrical backgrounds.
Right. And speaking of going back to the music part, Saw was another one that had that music.
You know, you hear that music, you know what it is.
Right. You instantly knew it was going to be a Saw film. Mm-hmm. And they've done 8 or 9 of these things. So, you know, and now they've got a new one coming. Spiral, I believe, is what it's called.
Yeah, it's supposed to come out. This year, but got pushed to next year because of the pandemic.
Right.
And you know, the trailer actually looked interesting. You know, it had Chris Rock. I'm like, oh, okay. At first, you didn't even know it was a Saw movie at first, the way it starts out.
Yeah.
And then you get to the second half of the trailer. I'm like, oh, okay. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm. It kind of hits you with it and surprises you.
Yeah.
Now, do you think in that instance, it would have been better for them to not tell you it was going to be a Saw film, and then you just go see it, and then you're surprised?
You know, that's a very good point. I wouldn't mind that. That would have been kind of cool, actually. Kind of just trick you, and not trick you, but, you know, kind of just lead you on, and then at the end, when you're maybe halfway, when you're watching the movie, you find out, oh my goodness, it's actually a Saw movie. Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
I thought that might have been a good way to surprise the audience and to build momentum with the film. Mm-hmm. So you have kind of a week, okay, opening weekend or something, or it goes well either way. Mm-hmm. And then like the word gets out, oh my God, it's a Saw film. Holy shit. You know? And then suddenly all that fan base goes, and then you have a boost for the next week. and you're getting just as many people in, if not more.
Right.
And then you can say, we actually improved upon our film's money intake, you know, our box office gross. Which
and
is
we're, take, and we're taking the franchise in a different direction. You know, so people are like, oh, wow, you know, it's an interesting take on the franchise. You know, they went in a different direction. You know, people would be like, oh, man, that's really impressive. I'm glad they did something different, something original.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reason why they did it the way they did it is because, you know, the Hollywood studios, they're very risk averse. So they don't want to take that chance where 25 years ago they probably could have taken a chance like that, but they didn't want to do that. They just want to get straight to business and just like, okay, you know what? We'll let you know this is a follow-up in some way.
Yeah.
By the way, you know they're doing a Scream 5, right? I just found that out about a couple of months ago and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely doing a Scream 5, and it looks like they're trying to get most of the cast back for that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good and bad. I feel like if they're going to get the cast back, they need to introduce some new characters.
Yeah, well, they did in 4, although they kind of eliminated them.
Right.
But
they need
the movie.
To introduce new characters that are going to stay within the franchise. Fresh blood, in other words.
Right. And also, that means you have to eliminate some of the old guys, well, some of the old people, unfortunately. They now need to be kind of transitioning on.
Well, I think Sydney needs to go.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is the perfect movie to finally make that transition.
Yeah. Yeah, she had a fun time and a good life for a while, and now she can die.
Right.
That sounds terrible, but hey, that's just the way it is. So let's look at now that we've discussed music and things like that, and having a strong protagonist and antagonist, what else do you think really heightens the genre of horror?
Well, I guess, you know, though it's been done so many times, but sometimes you got to do it again creatively, is probably the way, at least in this case, if you're doing like a slasher film or a killer movie, you know, how they're taking people out. Like what's the method of dispatching victims?
Right.
So it's like Freddy, where it's being done in a nightmare setting, which is very unique. When that first came out, that, you know, I caught people off guard, like, oh, wow. And it's very scary, too, because you think about it, you have to sleep at some point. So that really creeped you out.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than before that, you know, Jason, Michael, Leatherface, a lot of other rip-off, knockoff characters where it's just, it's always the same recycled plot of there's a serial killer wearing a mask or they're using the creepy music. He's dispatching victim after victim after victim until you get to the last girl. And then you might find some little small plot twist at the end on who the killer was or is. But that's one way to go. Can you do it creatively? Saw would be another way of being a creative. You got people locked up in a bathroom. There's a tape recorder. You know, you're actually being forced to hurt yourself. He's not the killer himself technically isn't killing you. It's actually you're setting yourself up to be killed.
That was a very clever way of reinvigorating the horror genre.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people had not really heard of that. Mm-hmm. I think closest to that kind of scenario we got was that sci-fi horror film Cube, I believe it was.
Yes, yeah, it came out years before. Exactly. I think I talked to you about that. Like, often.
Yeah, I think we've probably talked numerous amounts of times about that. Mm-hmm. But in this film Cube, they a bunch of people, like I think it was 5 or 6, maybe 7 people, wake up in a room and they don't know where they're at. And the walls kind of change and gears move and the ceiling changes and stuff every so often.
Different room.
And it reveals new rooms. And then they have to decide whether they're going to move into another room to try to get out or if they're going to wait there. You know,
or also if the room is a safe room or not.
Right. If it's safe to move or should they stay where they're at?
Yeah, you also had to use math in order to navigate this cube or, you know, the series of rooms.
I know a lot of people that would have been dead like right away.
Oh, that's true.
Just stand behind somebody at the supermarket grocery checkout and you will know who is not going to last.
Oh, that's true. Also, you remember the twist at the end of the movie. I mean, I won't give it away, but the twist of the movie makes you even more like, oh, man, that sucks.
Yeah, yeah, the ending was a bit crazy for sure. So for those that haven't checked it out, we do recommend watching Cube if you do get a chance. It is a cool little sci-fi, indie sci-fi horror film.
Mm-hmm.
with more psychological horror elements to it than anything else.
Oh, for sure. I mean, think about it. You drive yourself nuts because, like, man, you know, you're stuck in these series of rooms. People are dying around you. It's like, man, what am I going to do? You're just losing your mind. Like, am I ever going to get out of here? Or am I going to be here for the rest of my life? Am I going to die here? Oh, yeah, it drives you nuts.
You're talking about, basically, when we're discussing this, you're talking about scenarios, setting up these tropes, these ideas of this is what a horror film's about. This is what you have to go through. These are your trials as an audience member as you follow along with the protagonist in the film.
That's right.
Now, can you think of some films where the horror films where the protagonist is actually also the antagonist, where it's a horror film where you're rooting for the bad guy in it?
Well, I brought up earlier because I really never cared much for the for the people he's killing, and that'd be Leprechaun.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. A lot of people really root for Leprechaun, and with good reason. And that's because, you know, he's been everywhere. He's been from space to the hood.
Yeah.
You know,
Las Vegas,
out on the farm. All over, you know. The Leprechaun is a very cool character with a lot of fun behind him, so they had fun with his horror films.
And to his defense, people are kind of like set themselves up for trouble. You know, all he wants is a pot of gold. I mean, that was like the initial plot. It's like, dude, just give back his gold coins and everything will be all right. But you know, people being greedy and acting a fool.
What if you combined a Leprechaun with Saw? And he had, Jigsaw had put one of the coins inside, sewed it inside your body, and then released the Leprechaun into the room.
Oh boy, that'd be bad.
Right?
He'd be talking to you with his limericks and like, give me back me coin! I'm going to have to cut you open to get my coin.
And he wouldn't be delicate about it either.
Oh no, not at all. Not at all.
No, he would be very, very mean about it, I'm sure. So yeah, anything else you can think of as far as horror elements and stuff that we haven't covered? We have like a minute or two left that we can just bring this up.
Well, with certain movies, it may be things that are like creepy crawly type figures or a monster that's just, you know, very grotesque looking that scares the heck out of you.
Yeah, the creation of the villain in these films, the horror icon, is extremely important. They don't call them icons for nothing. You have icons in certain genres. You don't have drama icons. You have action hero icons, and you have horror icons, and that's pretty much it. Occasionally, you'll have an icon in comedy, but not all that often anymore.
Right.
So it's usually just horror or action is where you're going to get these iconic characters that you're going to want to follow along in their story, on their journey.
That's right.
Which is why they made a Scream television series, which is why they made a Friday the 13th television series. You know, they've tried to build upon these characters and bring out this world for other people. And they're going to continue to do this for a long time. And one thing that I can hope for is that at some point somebody decides to bring Nailbiter into a celluloid universe. I would be happy as a clam, let me tell you.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that would make sense.
Yes.
Or that series from almost a decade ago from Scott Snyder, Severed.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was creepy, too.
Yep, that'd be very creepy. That'd be a creepy, you know, movie or even series, you know, building up to what happens at the end.
So those of you that are listening, if you haven't had a chance and you're into comic books, check out Severed. It's a miniseries from Mr. Snyder. And then we have I think it's Williamson that did Nailbiter.
Mm-hmm.
And if I recall, they were both Image Comics, too.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, definitely check those out. They're well worth reading and getting into, and they're very scary. So it'd be perfect comic book companions for your horror lifestyle in this month of October.
You know what? I just remembered another movie that I'm actually going to watch over the weekend along with the sequel. I've never seen a sequel before to this, 30 Days a Night. I thought that was a pretty good movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is based off a horror comic.
Recently, they said it wasn't perfect, but they enjoyed watching it. It's definitely, I think it's one of those where the book is better than the film.
Right.
But you can't go wrong, really, with Danny Houston as a villain. It's what he does, and he does it well.
And Josh Hartnett does a good job as one of the main protagonists as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to do it for us, Kevin. We've kind of broken it down for the audience a little bit, and you out there in the podcast land. Please, if you can seek us out, we are on a multitude of podcast platforms. We are on YouTube. We are on Spreaker. We are on Stitcher. We are on TuneIn. We are on Blueberry. We are on iHeartRadio. We are on iCloud, Apple Podcasts, and a whole host of others. So if you do get a chance, please, please, please check us out on there. Give us a follow. Give us a like on YouTube. Subscribe to us, please, if you get a moment. Subscribe to us on YouTube. That's very important. And you can also reach out to us on our social media platforms. Where are we on social media, Kevin?
Let's see. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on, obviously, on YouTube, Facebook.
Yep. On all those. A host of social media platforms that you can reach out to us. If you have any suggestions for podcasts you'd like us to do, any questions that you have, we're happy to answer. But until then, I'm Donald.
And I'm Dr. Kevin.
And maybe someday we'll see you
at the sometimes scary, fascinating, righteous, and sweet comic book shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.